Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Huberdeau walks in, dangles to the net, and scores! Jonathan Huberdeau with a pretty empty net goal, his second in as many preseason games as a Flame, and he gives his new team a 4-0 lead.
Jonathan Huberdeau caps off a successful night for the Calgary Flames in preseason game number 4. Good morning, Sportsnet today, kicking things off this morning from our downtown studios in beautiful Calgary, Alberta, Canada. I am Logan Gordon. He is Patrick Dumas, spreading the tunes. Our man, Alex Brody, felt appropriate with a little Coolio today.
Yeah, man. Bummed me out last night hearing that. 59 that's years old. Rest in peace, Coolio.
That's not very old.
No, hell no.
Pretty successful night for the Flames last night. You heard the call from Derek Wills right here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. 4-0, your final for a very... called veteran lineup for the Calgary Flames.
Just a bit.
Not quite the same for their opponent.
No.
As Oilers fans would remind you last night at every turn.
It's the Condors. We're just calling.
Okay.
Derek Ryan's our best player here.
No, okay.
Calm down.
We get it. No one actually cares about the result. It doesn't. I didn't see a Flames fan last night, though. So there's revenge for the playoffs. No one's saying that. It's a good game, though. If you went last night hoping to catch a glimpse of some of the new Flames superstars, Patrick, you would have left last night, I would say, pretty happy.
Yeah, I would say so, too.
Mackenzie Weegar gets a goal, set up by a great pass from Nazem Kadri, who made his Flames preseason debut last night. You heard the goal call from Derek. It was a nice finish by Jonathan Huberdeau on that empty netter to finish things off. And then, of course, the usual Flames superstars that always get the scoring done, Michael Stone and Brett Sutter. The usual.
Oh, yeah.
The typical cast of characters when you think of looking at the Flames score sheet. Those would be the guys there. Jacob Markstrom also gets the start for the Flames last night. He goes two periods before giving way to young Dustin Wolf. They combine for the shutout. Flames now 3-1 on the preseason, Patrick, and back at it up the road in Edmonton on Friday. I guess just some of your impressions from last night.
Yeah, I mean, it was, it was kind of like the similar style to what Seattle brought to the Flames the night previous, where they dressed, 90% NHLers up against a predominant AHL group, and it's hard to evaluate for sure, but I thought, saw some good things. Fourth line putting a lot of pressure for sure, getting that going as well. I thought, seeing Michael Backlund on the wing was cool to see as he skated alongside Kadri.
That raised a lot of eyebrows.
Yeah, right? Like, there's just trying something. Hey, who knows what now? There is a little bit more center depth here. Obviously we see Backlund as the 3C there, and then you can roll out your four lines as perfect and as solid as you'd like. But hey, different looks. It's like you see Adam Rzeczka on their wing as well the night before. So just giving these guys opportunities to try new things and work with new players as a preseason. I wouldn't put too much solace into seeing Michael Backlund on the wing come October 13th, but just seeing that this is a combination that the coaches have a potentially up their sleeves later in the season, who knows?
4-0, your final last night. First impressions of Nazem Kadri looked good. Didn't look like a guy that had a lot of rust.
Yeah.
If that's the type of player that they're getting for the majority of this 7-year contract, I think you're very happy if you're the Calgary Flames. I think he... obviously, there's a level of intensity that changes come the regular season, but I thought Kadri did a little bit of everything good for the Calgary Flames last night. The playmaking ability was there. I thought he was in the game. I liked his line. I mean, again, you're right. How much do you really throw into who the opponent was? Mm-hmm. Not a lot. It's one of those things that makes preseason evaluation a difficult thing because you want to be impressed, but you have to sort of hold yourself back. I think you have to look at little things like the power play. First power play unit that rolled out to Foley, Lindholm, Kadri was there. Hannafin's your one defenseman. Things like that looked really good for the team. And I thought those are the kind of things that I'm looking for, those moments that I can see moving towards the regular season that I think are going to stick. And excuse me, Huberto was on that as well. Yeah. Anderson was there at different times. So I think a lot of it is little things that you're going to pick up and say, okay, I saw that working in the preseason. Mm-hmm. They worked on it. It's obviously carried over into the regular season. I think those are kind of the things you'll look at more than the result.
Yeah, it's exactly it. And this is a time to try out new things for sure. And the new look power play with Anderson on the point and Toffoli up front, it's good to see, cool to see. I think it's going to be a dangerous power play, too, between the passing ability of Huberto and Kadri to dish it around and then the shot ability of Lindholm and Anderson. That'll be a fun time.
Yeah, it looks good so far. We'll see how the rest of the preseason plays out. We'll see what kind of group the Flames are planning to send to Edmonton.
I could see it's probably like a flop. 90% Edmonton would be probably, and then like majority Wranglers probably up the road.
It'll be, I think, a lot of what that group was in Seattle.
Because Connor McDavid hasn't made his preseason debut yet. Draisaitl hasn't made his debut yet. So it would make sense maybe tomorrow, Friday night, would be the debut we see where the Oilers would trot out their majority of their NHLers.
And just checking the schedule, I believe the Flames have the weekend off.
Yeah, they're back on on Monday against Seattle.
So they've got time here. Let this group
would assume some cuts over the weekend.
Yeah, let this group in Calgary that played last night get some rest over the weekend, a couple more practice sessions in, use them for those home games. And then, I would imagine most people that are on the bubble for this team, most of the guys on the bubble of the roster will head to Winnipeg next week.
Yeah, because then they just got Seattle and home with Winnipeg, and that's it. Yeah.
Yeah, and next Friday is the last. And you've got, kind of a nice situation for the Flames where that last preseason game is on the 7th. You don't play until the 13th.
Yeah, you got a good 6 days
almost,
off.
Yeah, there. You've got almost a whole week there to work on things. So cut your group down, start practicing like that with just your team going forward. And like we've talked about, this is an interesting month for the Calgary Flames because they play one road game in the month of October. And that's up the road in Edmonton on a Saturday night. So you've got a chance to really get things going, get settled at home, get your group together, and you want to start this thing off right. So
I think
Flames
that would be
a good spot to do that.
It'll be good for this group with the new guys in town to work on some things with the home crowd behind them. Knowing the familiar settings and the surroundings of the Saddle Dome, that's good. It's a good month for a team that historically October has not been a great month for the Calgary Flames starting off. And, I think a majority of the slate at home, and they talk about making the Saddle Dome a hard place to play in. And you get off to a good start in October. It sets yourself up for the rest of the year. We talk about that benchmark of U.S. Thanksgiving. And, teams above that line, usually 80% of the time, they make the playoffs. So getting out to a good start is so key for this team, and getting the new guys, Huberto, Kadri, Uyghur, all them figured out and settled in is going to be key. And I think starting at home for that will help.
What about the head coach? What did Daryl Sutter think of his group last night in their 4-0 win against the Edmonton Oilers? Here he is post-game at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome following the Flames' 4-0 victory over the Edmonton Oilers.
What did you think of what you saw out there tonight?
Good work. Sort of just a methodical type of game.
How do you think Nazem looked in his first time in game action?
Looked like it was his first game in quite a while.
Are you starting to see some chemistry on that top line with Huberto, Lindholm, and Toffoli?
I think they're going to have to play a lot of games before that happens.
What was the rationale? I don't know if you said anything this morning about putting Backlund on the wing. I think
not just Michael and Blake to play with Naz tonight. Those guys play the right way all the time. Doesn't really matter position.
What have been your impressions of Mackenzie Uyghur so far?
I think he's He's a really good student of the game. He's a very coachable player. I think that he's trying to, not trying, he's, you know, learning how we play, things like that. And he's making strides. And he's a good player.
Does his skill set and do his strengths fit the way you guys want to play pretty well, do you think?
Yep, very well.
Jacob Markstrom, pretty good outing.
That was good. Get him a couple periods, work him back in. Solid. I think he's worked really hard the whole camp. He's out early and stays late, puts a lot of work in.
I guess, was it good to see Dustin Wolf sort of come into the third and get a little bit of work in?
Yeah, he's played, we've tried to play him lots. He played in Penticton and trying to get him in as many as we can.
Kind of surprised you this camp, or are things progressing as expected?
Yeah, you know what? We're a weekend. It's 1 week. That's what I said. Remember, this talked about the three parts of it. So,
we got. Unexpected might have come up for you, or anyone who might have stepped up in a way that you might not.
Oh,
have
you mean personnel-wise?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think that, you know, there's no, you know, there's no like a top pick or anything that's supposed to be jump out at you. I think there's still a lot of school for a lot of our young players.
Were you hoping they pick up, those young players? Were you hoping they learn during these weeks?
Hoping they what?
Were you hoping they learn?
Hope's dangerous. They are learning.
You know, your two games where you've had your veteran squads.
Yeah.
You haven't allowed a goal yet. I mean, that's symbolic of how
you know, we're just pretty much our, the older guys have played at home when you look at it. You know, I'm going to be very cautious of that for sure. So, you know, we're trying to put our structure in place, but at the same time, the individual's got to get a little selfish, put the work in.
Did you see some flashes from your power play, the first unit there?
You know, they had I think the first one, they was pretty much the whole 2 minutes in there. As they, you know, they're going to have to, because there's so many new guys that are going to, you know, at the top end there that... you know, they're going to have to just get a little bit more selfish in training camp, right, in terms of the shooting and not always looking and things like that.
Rasmus made a point of saying that he wants to shoot more. He wants to double his shots per game, basically. Do you agree with that assessment of him and what you expect out of him on the power play?
I think Rasmus is coming into his own. So, you know, we've talked to him since I came here about, you know, how much our defense has to shoot and more – take advantage of that, the shot volume part and quality shot volume. So he'll get better at it for sure because he wants to.
For you, when does a defenseman hit his prime? Is it an age thing? Is it a games played thing?
Yeah, I'm not really sure. Coached some really good ones and they were good when they were 21 and they were good when they were calling me wanting to come back and play when they were in their 40s, so some pretty good ones.
There's a lot of bodies competing for that kind of depth defense role. Do you like what you've seen out of that competition so far?
We're trying to get our pairs figured out. It's not really depth. I think the depth is there, right? It's whether they're, is that here or is that in with their anglers? So I think we're trying to get our pairs until we get Tanny back. Then it's, you know, McKenzie's moved right and left. Z's had a really good camp right from the start, so he's pushing for play higher and play more, play situations. So I think it's performance. There's four or five guys. It'll be based on their performance over the next, starting the next part of the preseason.
Is that where you see Kadri playing in the middle of that power play, kind of?
You know, we gotta work on it. Right? Something when you're basically working on it in games because just the way our practices or our game practice ratio has been, haven't been able to do much of it. So we'll just see how it filters out. We got different ideas in my head, and we wanted to, you know, start with the four forwards and one D, but I also think that McKenzie and Ross could be a on the back could be really good too, and then figure out who the forwards were. So there's lots to work on, I think.
There you go, the head coach of the Calgary Flames, Daryl Sutter, post-game last night. Lots of individual player assessment there.
Yeah.
Some general thoughts on the groups that he was asked about from the media. And, yeah, I think that some fair assessment in what he says there, and makes a lot of sense that, you know, hey, we're trying to figure things out until Chris Tanev's ready to go. Mm-hmm. So they'll do different things with the D pairings. Obviously, Oliver Shillington's still not with the group. There's still plenty to figure out, and as we talked about a bit yesterday, the preseason gives you lots of opportunities, unfortunately, sometimes. Eight of those games halfway through now for the Calgary Flames. They'll be back in action Friday up the road in Edmonton. You can listen to that game right here on Sportsnet 960, 6 p.m. Flames warm-up with the one and only Pat Steinberg, 7 o'clock puck drop with Derek Wills and Peter Labardius on the call. He's Patrick Dumas. I'm Logan Gordon. This is Sportsnet Today. A reminder that on Monday, the big show with Rustic and Rose kicks off officially at 6 a.m. Later on in the show today, we've got your morning report coming up at just after 6:30. Emery Hunt going to join us from CBS Sports, talk a little bit of NFL football. The week kicks off tonight with Thursday Night Football, a good matchup, mm-hmm. or at least on paper, a good primetime matchup between the Bengals and the Dolphins. Some reporting early this morning from Tom Pelissero and a few other NFL insiders that Tua Tagovailoa is expected to play tonight despite that injury that he suffered last week.
Mm-hmm.
The questions about concussion protocol, was it a back injury, was it a concussion, doesn't seem to matter. He's been cleared and is ready to go and looks to keep the Dolphins undefeated. We're also looking forward to a chat with Nick Ledgerwood a little bit later on from Cavalry FC. Tough result for them last weekend. You guys know that, and looking to mm-hmm. To bounce back again. So lots coming up on the program. You excited for Thursday Night Football tonight?
Yeah, it's a good start. This is Tua versus Joe Burrow. First time that these two have met since an absolute classic at between Alabama and LSU. That Burrow ended up winning on his way to a national championship. But, you know, this is these are two of the young stars in this league. And good to see Tua back, and that was really scary to watch on Sunday. And then to see that the injuries that showed up in the report definitely didn't look like what happened on Sunday. But good to see him back. They'll also have Jalen Waddle and Terron Armstead good to go. And Terron Armstead will be massive trying to protect, I guess not the blind side, because Tua's a lefty, but trying to protect, protect Tua Tagovailoa. But this is a good one. Miami's got a track team at receiver. This offense is exciting. Chance to go to 4-0, man. This is big for them and be the only undefeated team in the AFC. I think a lot of people thought Miami was going to be a pretty decent side this year, but maybe not to the extent that they are this year with the new rookie head coach. And I don't think I think a lot of people are seeing what Tua can do with some talent around him. But yeah, big one for Cincinnati too. It's a whiteout night. They got the white helmets. It'll be a special game for them. Primetime at Paycor Stadium now, I guess it's called. So, yeah, excited. Week 4. Can't wait, man. It's already October once we get to Sunday, I guess.
Yeah, Sunday.
Yeah.
Not yet. History last night to talk about as well in Toronto.
3-2. Throw deep to left field. This could be it. See ya. He's done it. Number 61. He's been chasing history, and now he makes it. He and Roger Maris are tied with 61 home runs.
Aaron Judge hits number 61 last night at the Rogers Center in a Yankees mm-hmm. win. Does it in front of Roger Maris Jr. His mother was there as well. She got the ball post-game,
yep.
The ball slipping through
inches
the fingers of a Blue Jays fan who apparently has one of the most ridiculous names.
Yeah,
I've ever come across. We need to talk about what exactly was happening last night. Well, I believe it was Frankie Lasagna.
Frankie Lasagna, yes.
Frankie Lasagna. Now, you might think that I'm lying about that, but apparently the man in the Blue Jays jersey that came within inches of catching Aaron Judge's home run ball is Frankie Lasagna. He also apparently owns a very prominent Toronto Italian restaurant.
He's got the good name for it.
And apparently it's quite the restaurant. And I mean,
it's called Frankie's Lasagna.
I don't think it's called Frankie's Lasagna.
No.
It could be. I mean, if you're gonna do it that way, then sure.
Maybe George Rusick knows where Frankie Lasagna's restaurant is.
I'm trying to remember. I'm gonna search it up now because I want to get the and of course right on Twitter. Frankie Lasagna.
Terrazza.
Yeah, Terrazza.
Yeah. Terrazza in Toronto. It's Frankie Lasagna. But yeah, I was hoping the ball wasn't gonna get caught by anybody. I was hoping I don't want anybody fighting over a damn ball. I don't want people fighting if there's kids. Just let the Yankee Stadium crowd fight it over 62. 61, it's whatever. You know?
Yeah, but are they going to... I don't think it means they're going to fight.
I don't... People are wired a lot differently nowadays where things, you know, like, this is my ball. No, it's mine. And if they see, I could get a lot for this. We have the whole story, like, you know, when Mark McGwire hit his 70th, the guy, all he wanted to do was meet Mark McGwire.
Jeff Rozeski, and he was on Blair and Barker.
Yeah, and then he's like, no, Mark McGwire didn't want to meet him, so he sold the ball $3 million. Todd McFarlane actually bought that ball, the creator of Spawn.
Did he actually?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
He bought Mark McGwire's 70th home run ball.
Well, that's a poor investment now.
Yeah, but it's just like, you didn't want to see any fight. I just want to get it in the bullpen, give it to the judge.
No, but I mean, if the guy caught it, I don't think anyone was going to sock him.
No, I don't know like that. I don't think he was ever going to hold Aaron Judge for ransom. He's like, I want this.
No, I mean the fighting between the fans. Yeah. You're worried. I don't think, like, if a guy caught it clean.
Yeah, you think
they're
right?
I don't think someone was going to.
Maybe the Yankee Stadium crowd can. That'll be different.
Do I think that if it lands in between a couple seats, is there going to be a pileup for it? Yeah, probably. But I don't know. I'm fine that it went in the Blue Jays bullpen. I'm even more happy that Frankie Lasagna missed it because
what a name!
I can't believe that's true. And all of it, that's all we're going through last night is all of a sudden they're talking to who missed it because there was a couple guys there. And then it was reporting that it was Frankie Lasagna, and he owns an Italian restaurant.
I thought that was like his Twitter handle or something. Like, he's just using a nickname.
He had to have changed that. There's no way.
Hey, people can be named after foods.
On the text line, 960-960, if you catch the ball, you're an instant millionaire. They're fighting for it. I don't know that you are. I don't think that ball's worth $1 million.
No, I think it's going to be like, hey, can
62
we get it?
Will be worth a
62 is the one that's going to be the one that matters.
But that just ties the record.
Yeah.
Like, McGwire's ball going for $3 million is different. This one, there's no way this one goes for anywhere close to that. I know the sports memorabilia market is...
People prominent,
but I don't think that one, you know, if I'm in that kind of category, that's not the ball I'm paying for. I'm glad that Aaron Judge has it. I'm glad that his mom has it now, but to me, that's not the ball.
And 62s, eventually, if they can get it from a fan, is going to end up in Cooperstown. So that's if the MLB can ever get their hands on it, 62 will end up in Cooperstown. Along with the bat, the uniform, everything that Judge did it with.
So there was lots last night from this, from the guy missing the ball, his name being Frankie Lasagna, the Blue Jays bullpen coach catching it, his wife who works for NFL Network tweeting that she's in Florida fighting a hurricane where their home is, and she's now got retirement on her mind. She was joking, obviously. They gave the ball to the Yankees. To also this... How about Roger Maris Jr. speaking to the media post-game and giving it to the likes of Barry Bonds, Mark McGwire, and Sammy Sosa?
Well, I think it means a lot, and it's not just for me. I think it means a lot for a lot of people, you know, that he's clean, he's a Yankee, he plays the game the right way. And, you know, I think it gives people a chance to look at somebody who... you know, should be revered for hitting 62 home runs and not just as a guy who did it in the American League. He should be revered for, you know, being the actual single season home run champ. I mean, that's really who he is if he hits 62. And I think that's what needs to happen. I think baseball needs to look at the records, and I think baseball should do something.
A lot of people who agreed with Roger Maris last night. I don't... And that's kind of been this back and forth on this, and we've had a few people on the text line ask about it and go back and forth. You know, why is this such a big deal? It is an American League record that he's going to break. The baseball record is still held by Barry Bonds.
Yeah.
But if you are a baseball traditionalist, or if you look at the steroid era of baseball with the asterisks that many do, then I wouldn't necessarily hold it against you if you felt as though this was the legitimate home run record.
Yeah.
Because we know Sosa and McGuire and Bonds all used, despite some denial and some back and forth on it. So if you wanted to say, that's why it's such a big deal. Because it's not just an American League record, not just because it's the Yankees, it's because some will feel as though this is the true home run record.
Yeah, and you know what? I also like to spin it this way. I wonder if it was anybody other than Aaron Judge and anybody other than the Yankees in the American League. Say Vladdy's doing this. Or let's say, I don't know, Adley Rutschman is going for 61. I don't know if it's the same, like we had, like yesterday it was like Stephen A. Smith going on First Take, going on like, why weren't the Jays pitching to him and all that? Well, how many 4-3-2 counts did Aaron Judge face in on Wednesday and all that? I just, like the whole 61 thing, I'm glad he's done it, gets a 62, and you want to play it up in the whole, like, yeah, it's if you want to make the real home run record, sure, maybe, but baseball is a sport that you can divide up into many different eras. There's an era where there was no black players. There was the segregation era. You know, there was the era, there's the PED era, if you want to break it down, where, you know, guys like Bonds, McGuire, Sosa, Palmeiro. God. I wonder where, Ken Griffey Jr., he was fine. You know, he just wasn't healthy. So, I get that. I get the fight for that to be it. But, you know, baseball's such a stickler for those records. They're not going to budge for anybody. These guys won't get in the Hall of Fame, but they're not going to take their records away.
Before we go to break, a couple more texts at 960-960. This texter says that there was an offer before the game for the ball for $2 million. But then this text says they were saying a $750,000 estimate on the 61st home run. So
that's more of a fair assessment. It's a tying.
That good
home
yogurt
run ball
over there? Good girt over there?
Oh, it's very good.
Jeez. Halfway through a little yogurt over there. All right.
Gotta eat, man. Anyways, no, it's
I wouldn't pay $2 million for that ball.
No,
I'm
not
just saying. And I'm not that I'll ever have the opportunity to, but I think back at when Mark McGuire's ball would have gone for $3 million, that was the ball. This isn't technically that ball. 61 is not even the record breaker, and again, there are still guys that have technically, quotation marks, technically hit more than 62. So I don't know, to me the 750,000 number makes more sense.
It's just because of who it is and where and who they play with.
And yeah, and I'm not, by the way, I'm not arguing with
exactly
that texter who said it was on the Yankee broadcast. I'm not arguing with you. I'm just saying, to me, I wouldn't think that that's a $2 million ball, just based on how it works, because that's a tying record, not a new one.
Yeah.
But that's just me. If there's a guy that legitimately offered $2 million for it, go ahead. That's great for you. You're not getting it.
People love things, and they want to buy them. They'll buy them.
And as this text, the perfect one to go to break, is it okay to celebrate home run 62, or will No Fun Logan shoot it down? Yes. I hate fun, and I hate everything associated with fun. No, that's a good text. We'll go to break. Patrick's got everything you missed last night on the morning report. We'll talk more about the Flames. We've got NFL on this Thursday night, Cavalry FC, a little bit of everything on your Thursday edition of Sportsnet today here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Busy night last night in the world of sports, and a busy night tonight continuing things. We'll get you all caught up with your morning report, brought to you by Motorworks, exceeding all expectations, BMW repairs and service in a state-of-the-art facility where they'll meet and beat all competitors' quotes on 51st Ave and 3rd Street Southeast. With your morning report, we hand the microphone over to Patrick Dumont. Good morning, Patrick.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, Logan. It was a Calgary Flames game day yesterday. They're taking on the Edmonton Oilers. First battle of Alberta of the 2022-2023 campaign. Only preseason, but we only get three of these during the regular season, which is downright wrong. Flames dressing about 90% of what will probably be their opening night lineup. Oilers setting a roster that looks more like the Bakersfield Condors. Pick this one up in the first period. Oh, seriously, Nazem Kadri also making his preseason debut, centering a line of Michael Backlund and Blake Coleman. Nothing going on in the first, but some good looks on the power play. They outshot the Oilers 13-8. Flames kept the pressure going on in the second. They finally found Pater.
Stone with a shot tip. It's loose in front. Sutter shoots and scores! Brett Sutter chops the puck past Calvin Pickard, scoring his second goal in as many games, and he gives the Flames a 1-0 lead.
Sutter slides that one by Calvin Pickard. Late second period now. Stuart Skinner in net for Edmonton. The fourth line goes to work again for Calgary.
Gets away from Fogle. Banks it off the boards, back to the blue line. Sutter with a slap shot that misses Skinner's net. And now Stone a drive. He scores! What a shot by Michael Stone, who blows that puck right past Stuart Skinner and makes it 2-0 Flames.
Absolute rocket. Comes out the other side. Michael Stone, he's a weapon, man. He's a weapon.
Never seen that before.
Stone second of the preseason.
Get a new move, Mike. Just kidding. That one works pretty well.
Exactly. Imagine what he could do with a wooden stick. Michael Stone's second of the preseason has the Flames up 2-0 after 43rd period now. A couple of the new faces connect for their first points. That's Calgary Flames.
Now comes free for Kadri again. Kadri, right wing side to Weegar, steps in, shoots, and scores! On a great pass from Nazem Kadri, Mackenzie Weegar zips the puck past Stuart Skinner, and it's 3-0 Flames.
Nazem Kadri provides the assist. Nice silky pass to Mackenzie Weegar. Jonathan Huberdeau would add an empty netter. Flames win 4-0 over the Edmonton Oilers. Coach Sutter, what do you make of your third goal scorer, Mackenzie Weegar?
He's a really good student of the game. He's a very coachable player. I think that he's learning how we play, things like that. And he's making strides. He's a good player.
He's a very good player. Next action for the Flames will be Friday night up the road in Edmonton. 6 o'clock warm-up with Pat Steinberg. Peter Labardius there. And Lubo and Derek will have the call at 7 o'clock. But the Flames, they get their third preseason win of the year, Logo.
Yeah, big win for them last night. Very veteran squad for the Flames. The Oilers, obviously, on the road. Not dressing as many NHL regulars, so you have to put that in when you're thinking of evaluation. But good to see some of those things that you hope to see. When you have that many NHLers, you should have an easier time against them. So let's put that into perspective. Good to see things like the power play units start to click a bit. I know they didn't score, but they had some chances. And if you're going to one of these games in the preseason, that's kind of what you're hoping to see, right? You want to see Kadri do something. You want to see one of the new guys. Weegar is out there looking good. I'm excited to see what 52 brings for this Flames team going forward. So good. It'll be a different scenario on Friday in Edmonton and a chance for some more guys on the bubble to make an impression. But that's you kind of took care of business like you should have last night, and that's a good start for the Flames.
And those games like we'll see tomorrow night in Edmonton are games that I'm more interested in seeing because there's jobs to be won here. There's still an open spot on the wing, and there's still a sixth defenseman that needs to be filled right now as we wait for Oliver Shillington. So Friday I'll be a lot more tuned in because there's going to be some guys with maybe their last chance to try and impress this coaching staff and earn a job for October. Rest of the NHL story, Matt Murray. He made his Leafs debut, stopped all 16 shots as he faced in Toronto's 3-0 win over the Habs. Murray in a competition with Ilya Samsonov for the number one gig in Leafland. Good news in Philadelphia as Sean Couturier. He's not going to need surgery on that back. Remains week to week, so it's still an indefinite time period for him to return to the ice. But still good news. They should at least see Couturier eventually this season. And boy, they will need him as Philly. Not a lot of people believe in the Philadelphia Flyers. And a couple of injury stories to monitor. Ducks young superstar Trevor Zegras left last night's game after getting hit by Arizona Coyotes' Yan Yenik. And the Wings young superstar Lucas Raymond left his contest as well. So that's what you worry about in these preseason contests, especially with the young guys. You just don't care about the result. Yeah, you want them to look good, but just stay healthy for the main part.
Yeah, disappointing. You never like to see injuries at any time. As far as the Couturier news goes, yeah. I mean, that's huge for the Flyers. I don't know what kind of season they're in for, period, but a chance to get one of their best players back is going to be important.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, the Zegras one's unfortunate. You hope he's okay. It's a pretty hard open ice hit that he takes.
Clean.
Yeah, I thought it was fine.
Yeah.
I just thought it was a good hit. Sometimes you got to be reminded as a young kid to keep
your
head up.
Small guy, big guy.
Yeah, it happens. So hopefully everyone's okay, though. Yeah, you want to get out of preseason as healthy as possible. There's mm-hmm. enough injuries that come during the season. Especially for those young guys, too. That's a big one. So fingers crossed everyone's all right.
To baseball, the rubber match between the Blue Jays and the Yankees. Toronto with a shot of clinching a playoff spot with a win and a Baltimore loss. Yankees fresh off clinching the AL East on Tuesday night. Giving the night off to a majority of their regulars. Aaron Judge, however, in the lineup, still with his eye on Roger Maris's 61 home runs. Mitch White going for the Blue Jays, and boy, would he have an eventful outing. Walking Judge and Oswaldo Cabrera to start the game. Josh Donaldson would be next, who at this point is 0 for 9 in the series with 5 strikeouts. You figure, yeah, he's probably due.
The 0-1, lined the other way, a base hit into right center field. Judge waved towards the plate as he crosses third. He'll come in to score on an RBI base hit from Donaldson. 1-0 New York. Oswaldo Peraza rolls a base hit into left field, and the Yankees are in front, 2-0. The 0-2. High fly ball out to right field. Deep enough, likely to get Donaldson home. Circled by Hernandez. Teoscar's got the catch. Makes the catch and throws to second. Donaldson hustling down the line. Tags and scores. 3-0 New York.
Jays once again behind the eight ball to open in this one. Garrett Cole getting the start for the Yankees. He looked absolutely thrilled to be pitching in this one. The presumed starter for game one of the ALDS for the Yankees, though. He was truly brilliant, retiring the first 15 Blue Jays he'd face. He was perfect through five. And then the sixth inning hit.
3-2 pitch. Hit high in the air out to deep left field. That ball's going to go. The Blue Jays get their first hit. They get their first run. And they bust up the perfecto with Danny Jansen leaving the yard.
Danny Jansen continuing his great season. That's his 14th of the year. Ending Garrett Cole's perfecto bid, as Ben Wagner so put it. That would get the bit of a rally going. Whit Merrifield would single. Jackie Bradley Jr. draws a walk. And after George Springer RBI sack fly, Bo Bichette looking to make up for yesterday's blunders.
The pitch. Ground ball weakly struck towards third. Cut up in the hole. Under the glove of Donaldson. Picked up by the shortstop. Peraza throw to first. Not in time. Whip a throw back to second. Bradley's back safely. A run is in for the Blue Jays. And it's 3-2 New York on a wild play around the bases.
Cole clearly getting rattled. He would actually get called for a balk, meaning both runners advance. So now the runners on second and third with a chance to tie the game. Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
Garrett Cole comes out, carves through the first 15 batters that the Blue Jays brought to the plate. But right now, in this sixth inning, it's rocking. The 1-1. Swinging a high fly ball out to deep left field. Hicks goes back. He's there. Makes the catch. Bradley's at third. Coming down the line. Racing to the plate. He scores! And we've got a brand new ball game in Toronto.
We do. It was 3-3. Remember that run, because that was the high point for the Jays. Off to the seventh, Tim Mazza, who's 8-0 at this point on his season. Hell of a reliever right now. We need him. Now he's into the game. Aaron Hicks would single to lead off the inning. Aaron Judge with another chance at history.
And the 3-2. Throw deep to left field. This could be it. See ya. He's done it. Number 61. He's been chasing history, and now he makes it. He and Roger Maris are tied with 61 home runs, the most anybody has ever hit in a single season in American League history.
That's Michael Kay on the Yes Network broadcast. Number 61 for 99. Aaron Judge tying Roger Maris with 61 home runs. The American League record set 61 years ago. Rogers Center crowd, very classy reception for Judge, despite the Yankees taking the lead 5-3. Just get worse from there. Harrison Bader would tack on one more before the inning was done. New York would score two more in the ninth, thanks to a wild pitch from Adam Simber. And then in his fit of rage, forgot to cover the plate. Cabrera and Donaldson score. Final score, 8-3. Let's hear from the man of the hour, Aaron Judge, on hitting home run number 61.
It's an incredible honor, you know, and getting a chance to be, you know, associated with, you know, one of the Yankee greats, you know, one of baseball's greats, you know, be enshrined with him forever is, you know, it's, words can't describe it, you know, and that's one thing that's so special about the Yankees organization is all the guys that came before us and kind of paved the way and, you know, played the game the right way, did the things the right way, did a lot of great things in this game, and getting a chance to be, you know, mentioned with those guys now is, I can't even describe it. It's incredible honor, that's for sure.
Aaron Judge, home run 61, tying Roger Maris. 62 will be a little bit more of a party, I assume, once they get back to Yankee Stadium. I thought this was interesting. Roger Maris Jr., son of Roger Maris, was in Toronto the last three nights, trying to see if his dad's 61-year-old record would at least be tied. He finally saw it. Here's Maris Jr. talking about what this record is for baseball.
Well, I think it means a lot, and it's not just for me. I think it means a lot for a lot of people, you know, that he's clean, he's a Yankee, he plays the game the right way, and, you know, I think it gives people a chance to look at somebody who, you know, should be revered for hitting 62 home runs and not just as a guy who did it in the American League. He should be revered for, you know, being the actual single season home run champ. I mean, that's really who he is if he hits 62. And I think that's what needs to happen. I think baseball needs to look at the records, and I think baseball should do something.
Baseball purists probably agree with Roger Maris Jr.'s sentiment that, you know, the 61, soon to be possibly 62, is the true home run record because of who is above him. You know, a lot of it just comes in the moment that just happened, I think. You know, like, he just hit the home run. It's a Yankee that did it. And, you know, like, when you break it down, like, who's the only ones that hit more than Judge and Maris? They didn't do it clean. It was Bonds, McGuire, and Sosa. We all know what those three went through and what they did to the game.
Yeah, interesting moment from Roger Maris post-game, and obviously, knowing his dad and the era that he played in, it makes sense that he feels that way. It was a great moment last night. I think the Jays tried to, you know, avoid it as
they
much as possible.
They did a very good job. They were doing the damnedest. We almost made it out.
Yeah, I mean, I thought there was some great stuff. We talked about it a bit to start the show, and I think the Rogers Center did a great job.
Oh, yeah.
Doing it justice. It's very cool that he tied the record. Now I think you're right. The next home run's the big one. Now that it's great to tie the record, but it's another thing to set a new record yourself. So that'll be the big one. And I think today we're all, you know, just happy that I think if you're a Blue Jays fan, you're happy it's over with, and you don't have to be a part of it anymore. And you get to stop hearing about Aaron Judge. The rest of the league will still, you know, watch with bated breath as he returns home to take on the Orioles. And as a potential, I think it's, I wanted to see him do it at Yankee Stadium. Yeah. I think if that's the one thing I want to take away from it, I don't mind that he hit it in Toronto. That is what it is. He was always going to hit it at some point, but do it at home. I think at Yankee Stadium,
get the real record
at
home.
At Yankee Stadium would be great.
As for the Jays, they do fail to clinch that playoff spot. They do have a chance to clinch today. More on that in a second, but yeah, Logo, just credit the Jays. They dig themselves out of the hole, but I think that Judge home run really sucked the life out of the Jays. But they missed the chance to clinch. So we'll see. They're off today, back at it to begin a three-game set with the Boston Red Sox on Friday. So the Jays didn't hold up their end of the bargain. Could the Boston Red Sox?
3-2. Down the line.
Get up.
Headed toward the pesky pole. That ball is gone. Verdugo sneaks one in down the right field line.
That's Alex Verdugo. Sox win 3-1, so it was a good night. Jay's magic number actually did drop to 1, so good night on the out-of-town scoreboard. That's because the Rays, they were taking on the Cleveland Guardians. Long rain delay in this one, dampening the festivities, but the home crowd would go home happy in extras.
Drive to deep right field, and the Guardians will walk it off. Rosario, patience be damned. He got that first pitch he could handle and stroked into deep right field. Oscar Gonzalez scores the winning run. And the Guardians beat Tampa by a final score of 2-1.
Yeah, so Cleveland wins, does the Jays a favor, keeping that game and a half lead in the wild card. So the Jays, they want home field. That's the key. Avoid the trop. Get those three at Rogers Center. That's what matters. Seattle, they break out of their losing streak. They beat the Texas Rangers 3-1 to get within a half game of Tampa Bay for that second wild card. They're now 4.5 up on Baltimore. Over to the National League, the Phillies are collapsing at the worst possible time, losing a fourth straight, this time to the Cubs. That lead in the final wild card spot now down to just a half game over the Milwaukee Brewers. That's because the Brewers did their job. They won 5-1 over the Cardinals. Good news for Philadelphia, though. They do hold the tiebreaker over Milwaukee. The Dodgers, they shut out the Padres, so San Diego's still up 2.5 on Philadelphia, and the Padres own that tiebreaker there. Phillies, like I said, just a half game up on Milwaukee. Should be an amazing weekend as well. The Atlanta Braves, they dropped their one yesterday, so the Mets move back in front in the NL East. The Mets and Braves do battle this weekend in Atlanta. NL East likely to be decided probably between those three games.
Getting down to it, just a couple weeks left of regular season baseball and still lots to decide across the league.
1 week today from today, last day of the year.
Yeah, looking forward to it. These are exciting times. Really only a couple things are decided. There's still plenty to be figured out. So that's what you want in September baseball. Into early October, we'll have a little bit. And then before you know it, playoffs will be here.
Thursday night football, week 4 in the NFL. The Dolphins. Taking on the Bengals. It's week 4, logo.
Is that a Bengal? Is that what a Bengal sounds like?
That's a tiger.
Like? Bengal tiger?
Yeah, okay. It's a tiger roar. So, you know, it's just a special tiger. That's all it is. It's a fancy tiger Bengal is.
Okay.
It's week 4 tonight. Cincinnati, who's the 1-2 Bengals, and Joe Burrow take on the lone unbeaten in this AFC with the 3-0 high-flying Miami Dolphins in town. Bengals debuting their white helmets tonight in a whiteout game for the nationally televised tilt. Kickoff from Paycor Stadium goes at 6:15 tonight. Cincinnati is the 2-point favorite at home, with the total coming in at 47. Tom Pelissero was reporting this morning. Tua Tagovailoa listed as questionable. Should be able to go tonight as he battled with some back and ankle issues. Jalen Waddle, Xavien Howard, and Teron Armstead are also listed as questionable. Though Waddle and Armstead should be good to go. The Bengals are as healthy as a team can be at this point of a season. This is the first matchup between Tua and Joe Burrow since 2019, when the two played an absolutely legendary contest down at Tiger Stadium in Baton Rouge between Alabama and LSU, when Burrow's LSU Tigers won 46-41 on their way to a national title and a Heisman Trophy for Burrow. Since he got their first win last week against the Jets, while the Dolphins somehow, someway engineered a very close victory over the Super Bowl favorite in the Buffalo Bills. Real get-right game, you think, tonight for the defending AFC champions. If they can somehow slow down this track team that is the Miami Dolphins. We'll see if Waddle's able to go, but regardless, they'll still have the cheetah Tyreek Hill. Exciting game to kick off week 4, logo.
Yeah, fingers crossed. The primetime game on paper looks good. That's always half the battle, and should be two high-flying offenses, you'd think. That certainly has the potential to be that way, so I'm looking forward to it. I think this has real game of the week type feel to it. It could be that kind of matchup. The Bengals, after a Super Bowl appearance last year, would really hate to start the season 1-3. So
you might say goodbye to your season starting 1-3.
Yeah, it's a tough hill to climb back up if that's what you're starting, but we'll see. Could be a good one tonight. I'm looking forward to it.
Not so exciting news if you're a fan of Charger football like my friend Logo here. Already down left tackle Rashawn Slater for the year because of torn biceps. Rush end Joey Bosa headed for surgery to repair a torn groin suffered in their loss to the Jaguars last Sunday. This means more work for Kyle Van Noy and second-year pro Chris Rump, L.A. in Houston on Sunday.
Shut up.
Yeah. With Hurricane Ian making landfall on the west coast of Florida and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers scheduled to host the Kansas City Chiefs on Sunday, Sunday Night Football, the NFL has made U.S. Bank Stadium in Minneapolis home of the Vikings, the contingency backup plan in case they have to move the game from Raymond James Stadium. As of right now, it looks like the game will be played as regular in Tampa. But I don't know if you saw some of the scenes from yesterday during that hurricane, man. Like, reporters getting hit with branches and whatnot.
Yeah, you know what?
What are you doing?
Can we stop sending people to hurricanes? I don't need you there. I trust you. I believe you that there's a hurricane.
The camera's doing a fine job.
Yeah, I get it. Here's Phil with the latest. Well, a stop sign just Phil blew by
sideways.
My head, and I'm terrified for my life, but, you know, it's quite windy. Oh, really? I couldn't tell by that spruce tree flying off the road. Oh, you mean there's a Lamborghini floating down the highway? Yeah, okay. I don't need you there. I don't feel like those people get paid enough to do that.
Hell no. Chiefs, Bucks, Sunday Night Football. Should be a really good one there. Super Bowl 54 rematch. Good news. 55, I should say. Good news for the New York Jets. They don't have to worry about Broadway smoking Joe Flacco anymore. Is their quarterback of the future, Zach Wilson, ready to make his 2022 debut Sunday when the 1-2 Jets tangle with the 1-2 Steelers. Wilson suffered a torn meniscus and a bone bruise on a non-contact injury in week one of the preseason.
Lock up your mothers.
Yeah.
Zach Wilson's back, baby.
The Cougar Hunter. Yeah, wow. And Logan.
Was that?
It's a cougar.
No, I appreciate that. I just
Cougar Hunter.
I like that you didn't have a sound effect for it. You just made your own.
I don't know. I think I do a pretty good job.
That was good. That was. I wasn't. No, it was a compliment.
And Logan, do you know how hurt Mac Jones is?
I do not.
Day by day, he's getting better. We'll see how it goes. Day by day.
Oh.
Does he have a high ankle sprain?
Day by day. What do I look like? A doctor? An orthopedic surgeon? I don't know. Talk to the medical experts.
What are the medical experts on staff say?
Day by day. We'll evaluate him. Dave. I mean, what difference does it make to me? Do you think I'm going to read the MRI? That's not my job. So.
But it's theirs, and they talk to you about it, right?
Yeah, it's day by day. Day by day.
Day by day.
So salty.
12 times he explained to reporters that Mac Jones is day to day. Reported he suffered a high ankle sprain on the last play on Sunday's loss to the Baltimore Ravens. Expected to miss a few weeks. Patriots in Green Bay on Sunday.
Day by day.
PGA versus LIV Golf. It continues. And Rory McIlroy says the tensions between PGA and LIV Golf is having the sport rip itself apart. Wah.
Too bad.
McIlroy saying he doesn't want a fractured game and calls on both the PGA and LIV to work together for the good of the game.
No, that's great. That's fantastic. That's what people are known for is
working together.
Working together amicably to find a solution. Good luck with that.
But despite the wishes of McIlroy and others in the game, Jay Monahan, commissioner of the PGA, says plans to work together. Not happening.
Oh, it's stunning. It's
not
really
happening.
Really stunning.
And then that is the morning report.
Great job, Patrick.
Thank you.
Very well done. The Morning Report brought to you by Motorworks, exceeding all expectations. BMW repairs and service in a state-of-the-art facility where they will meet and beat all competitors' quotes on 51st Ave and 3rd Street Southeast. Sportsnet Today continuing next here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.